Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to begin by thanking Helen and Pastor Rajiv and your worship committee for extending an invitation for me. Is this working? This morning. Today marks the 7th anniversary of Good Samaritan becoming a reconciling church, a place that openly welcomes and affirms all people, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity. This day also closely coincides with the Silicon Valley Pride that will be held in downtown San Jose next Sunday. Over the last 4 years, Good Samaritan and several other Reconciling United Methodist churches have come together to demonstrate a commitment of loving our neighbor and radical hospitality. Our humble presence at the Silicon Valley Pride has helped to create an environment where true transformation can and does occur. Not just in the hearts of the Pride participants, but also mine and all those who greet them in communion over pretzels and bread. Together, Good Samaritan, along with Almaden Hills, Morgan Hill, San Jose First, Willow Glen, Fremont First, Alum Rock, Los Gatos, Los Altos, Palo Alto First, Willow Glen, Sunny Hills, and my church, Campbell United Methodist Church, have made this ministry of inclusion truly amazing. The video that you have seen a few minutes ago when entering the sanctuary represents a fraction of the people that stopped by to speak to us last year's Pride celebration. Some of the material that we've put together for that event in the past will be in the fellowship hall for you to look at during fellowship. Some 7 years ago, you as a church body opened your arms wide in an act of radical hospitality to welcome aboard people of all sexual orientations and gender identities. All churches that choose to make this courageous voyage to reconciliation have their own unique stories. Some seem to sail with their fair winds, while others journal passages through choppy and sometimes violent seas that tested their fortitude and resolve. Here we might momentarily reflect on Mark chapter 4 and the imagery of Rembrandt's famous painting, Christ in the Storm on the Lake of Galilee. Some members questioned the navigation, wondering and praying that their concerns of what was right or wrong, fear and anxiety, filling in spaces between those stubborn questions, as they always do, unsure that answers could be found, anxiety would fester and demand relief and care. In some cases, the ship, the church as it were, would need to return to safer waters, and for others, lifeboats would need to be deployed. For those that could persist through the uncertain weather, like Good Samaritan, their arrival and reconciliation and full inclusion has been a spirit-filled journey. The journey has strengthened and unified the congregation, making it more seaworthy as it moves towards the Northern Star, and true discipleship in Christ transforming both you as a congregation and the world along with it. As we think and reflect more about our spiritual journey as individuals and as a church, we might reflect on the thoughts of Miriam Williamson, a spiritual teacher, author, and founder of Project Angel Food, a Meals on Wheels program that serves homebound people with AIDS in the Los Angeles area, where she says, "Love is what we are born with. Fear is what we learn. The spiritual journey is unlearning of fear and prejudices and the acceptance of love back into our hearts. Love is the essential reality and our purpose on earth. As a reconciling ministry that affirms the sacredness of all life, we come together this morning to celebrate and welcome all God's creation, especially those that the church has abandoned or rejected, including those that are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer, questioning, and intersexed. I could continue in that litany of sexual and gender minorities, but I would most likely forget some, and most importantly, not have the time to delve into more important things. As I speak further about this group and myself, I refer to us as the LGBTQ plus community, but please remember that there are many more beyond that who are unnamed and that we should never forget. On occasion during this sermon, you may also hear me use the word queer. And I think it might be important to clarify the meaning of that term. Originally, it was used to describe something strange or unusual that laid outside the expected or normal. In the late 19th century, during a period of Victorian moralism, the word queer was hijacked, as words often are, and used in a rather pejorative way, and to assign shame to anyone not heterosexual or cisgender. This misappropriation closely mirrors the way in which the word gay has been used and continues to be used. In the 1960s, the LGBT community began an effort to destigmatize itself by reclaiming those words in an effort that has been fairly successful. Today, the word queer is proudly used as an umbrella term for sexual and gender minorities and who are neither heterosexual or cisgender, but most certainly marvelously set apart. And so you might then ask, what the heck is what the heck is cisgender? Yes, I know the words never end. Cisgender usually is understood as a gender that one is assigned at birth, based largely on a simple examination of one's genitalia by the doctor as you're being born, and naturally ambiguous as that might be sometimes. Which raises one final point worth highlighting. God's creation is infinite, and knowing no limit or bound, and is constantly revealed to us anew. There are no discrete colors of flowers, but vibrant and even variegated hues. Take a moment to look around and notice how your hair, your eye colors, are subtly different than those around you. One's sexuality and gender is no different, and is a result of a complex formulation of genetic, biological, psychosocial, and many more constituents. Yes, even gender lays along a spectrum with a hermaphrodite occurrence, a rate of about 1 in 2,000. That's almost like the same as everyone that has red hair. That's about how often that happens. And that is only the external manifestations. Gender also has a neurological component, and it is when the internal and the external pieces of who we are represent disagree that transgender dysphoria and confusion is manifested. The beauty and wonder of God's creation is indeed awing. This morning, I'd like to consider with you the relationship with those that we don't know, or perhaps even thought we knew, but maybe not so well. Frequently, we will exercise an overabundance of caution, perhaps like the Levite, out of fear or some other misguided concern. For many of you today, I may be a good example of that unfamiliar person whom one might be cautious or leery about. Although maybe not near as much as that naked man laying on the side of the road that Dick described from the Gospel of Luke this morning. To set aside any wonders so that we might all walk closely in neighborly love, I'd like to take a moment to share a little bit about myself. Before I begin, however, I'd like to tell you that I'm a queer transgender woman. Basically, that means that I was born or I was identified as a male when I was born. And now I identify as a woman. Very briefly, I was born in a small town surrounded by corn, an hour's drive outside of Chicago. Growing up in the 1960s, in such a place was incredibly difficult for me as a small boy. I didn't understand what I was feeling, and there was no language at that time to describe what I was feeling. Life at home didn't provide much relief as I was as I competed with two brothers and two sisters and parents who were very stoic, equally conservative, and somewhat emotionally distant. All I knew was that doing things with other boys and not something that I wanted or was comfortable doing or even particularly good at, and the girls wanted nothing to do with me. It's amazing how other children can quickly pick up our such cues. During elementary school, I was constantly bullied and ostracized to a point that I completely withdrew. The loneliness I might have felt was smothered by the safety and shield from shame that my coping strategies provided. Today, most of my memories of that time are very clouded and disjointed. I enlisted in the Navy on my 18th birthday, and it was as if my life had been reset, at least temporarily. My confidence and personality grew while serving aboard submarines in the Navy and as a diver. 6 years later, I left the Navy to do software engineering here in the Valley. Shortly after that, I found my wife-to-be, was married, and had two sons. During that time, however, those feelings which I had during the childhood returned and resumed haunting me. Some 10 years ago, under the unbearable weight of a torment, I entered therapy. I bounced from therapist to therapist, looking for help until I stumbled into one that helped me to put together the puzzle pieces that I couldn't by myself. Like the experience of doing some 1,000-piece puzzle where then you near the end and the pieces begin to easily fall together, excitement quickly built. Multiply that exhilaration by about a million, and you might understand how I and others like myself might experience those clarifying moments as those last puzzle pieces fall into place. The horrifying challenge for me and so many others that have confronted their sexuality or gender identity later in life are deep and sometimes intimate relationships that surround us, and the devastating impact that that such changes will have on all involved. I tried desperately to undo the puzzle, to return to that clouded past, so that my life, as unsettled and as confused as it was, could return and remain the way that it had been. And to avoid damaging or destroying those important and irreplaceable relationships around me, I struggled unimaginably, trying desperately, praying to remain that place which had been so familiar. Yet a cold and frightening darkness was closing in around me. It was during that time when the little light remained and glimmers of hope had all but faded that I began to feel something stirring within me. At first it was a whisper, and as I listened intently and patiently, it grew louder. Filling the darkness and the empty spaces of my heart until it could hold no more. It wasn't until later that I understood that this experience closely resembled what St. John of the Cross described as the dark night of the soul. And that the Holy Spirit within me and lives within each of us was awakened. God's infinite grace and love rushed to fill those wounded and empty spaces. I had resurrected into a new life. Guided by those experiences, I have directed my life towards working with LGBT youth, young adults, and families as they struggle with conflicts between sexuality, gender, and faith. A short while ago, I completed my graduate programs in clinical psychology and theology, and recently began work on my doctor of ministry. 2 months ago, I was also commissioned into the Order of Deacons within the church. Through all this work, it is my deepest hope and desire to serve my community as a pastoral psychotherapist, following my ordination in the United Methodist Church as a deacon. Outside my graduate programs, I've begun an internship as a therapist at a community counseling center for LGBTQ+ adolescents and young adults. That work experience has shown me how extremely vital and necessary that work is. Even in the Bay Area, with its liberal leanings, many families with LGBTQ teens and young adults struggle to find ways to reconcile their faith or culture with being queer. Outside our little bubble of relative nirvana, things are generally much worse. One need only look at the recent federal rollback of transgender bathroom protections, or the onslaught of state religious freedom bills proposed designed to discriminate against LGBT folk. My coming out story may evoke a certain sense of compassion, and while I long every day for reconnection with my sons, I also feel truly blessed in comparison to so many other LGBTQ folks. I was fortunate enough to be financially, emotionally, and spiritually positioned to weather the violent storms during my coming out process. Even with those resources and advantages, it would have been unlikely that I would be here talking with you today if not for the deep and supportive friendship that I developed within my LGBTQ community, my church, close friends, and continued therapy. The importance of others like the Good Samaritan in my life during that time cannot be overstated. The origins of hate, fear, and shame attached to being queer can be found in 6 clobber passages of the Bible's 31,000 verses, identified through the imagery of queer people being clobbered by the Bible. The number of scholars and theologians that have dissected, debated, and written volumes about those highly divisive passages, those 6 passages, are truly staggering. Yet the conflict continues with even more conviction and fervor than ever before, frequently turning into an ideological battle that takes no prisoners. The United Methodist Church isn't immune from this battle as it declares all people of sacred worth, and three short paragraphs later describe queer people as being an abomination. Less than a half a year from now, the United Methodist Church will be coming together in St. Louis, Missouri, to reconsider and vote on a new doctrine of human sexuality. No matter the outcome of that legislation, our church is going to look very different. The cost of this holy war on sexuality extends beyond the church walls and can be seen on the streets and underpasses of our urban centers, places where nearly 50% of our homeless youth are LGBTQ+. While we make up only 5% of the general population. These are the kids that face messages of hate and disgust from home, school, and church. Surrounded, their only choice is to retreat. These are the kids that hear, love the sinner, hate the sin, and face possible reparative therapy and ineffective and harmful psychological practice permitted in many states. These are the kids who run away or are thrown away from homes frequently steeped in conflict between faith or cultural beliefs and being queer. The staggering number of LGBTQ homeless does not count the number that saw suicide as a better way out of their despair. Nor does it count those who remain in psychologically abusive home environments. For those on the street, life is beyond anything that you or I can begin to imagine. Drugs and alcohol are an all too common tool to numb the hopelessness. With survival sex used as payment, and STDs and poor health as change. Yet the self-righteous priest and the Levite of today, who condemn those youth and the destruction of their families, walk indignantly past their withering bodies on the other side of the road. And so Jesus asked again, which of these do you think was a neighbor to those youth? Images of the queer body walking within Christ towards the cross and against the backdrop of a sanctimonious and sinful world routinely fills my mind. Returning to the story of the Good Samaritan, we need to ask ourselves how we might more fully and perfectly love our neighbors as Jesus instructed us. The church took an important step towards that command 7 years ago, when it became a reconciling ministry. Good Samaritan and many other local UMCs have also recognized that the job does not stop there. Participation at Silicon Valley Pride is one example of that outreach and act of reconciliation. Yet there is so much more to do. Our streets and underpasses fester with the wounded and unloved. Families have been senselessly ripped apart and traumatized. As a church and individually, we are called to be disciples of Christ for the transformation of the world. Yet we cannot happen unless we are actively engaged in it. Meaning that we cannot sit idly by when we see injustice. We must act. I was recently reading a book of one of my favorite theologians, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a pastor, an anti-Nazi dissident, that discussed a letter written by his friend, Martin Niemeyer, another anti-Nazi theologian and Lutheran pastor. Following 8 years of concentration camp and the end of the war, Niemeyer penned this lament. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionist, and I did not speak out, because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out, because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. As a loving and faithful community of God and all his creation, we are commanded to be good stewards and loving neighbors to all that he has shared with us. The oppression or annihilation of those gifts must be seen as an assault on his will in creation. It is not enough that we care for the wounded or serve as ambassadors of peace and love. We must also be champions of injustice. Only then can God's kingdom here on earth be fully realized. Thanks be to God.